Thank you very much for the invitation and the introduction. It's a pleasure to speak to such an important audience on such an important topic. In my talk today, I will review the battery safety and abuse tolerance test procedures for electric and hybrid electric vehicles, comparison and analysis of test methods published. And it is actually follows very well on the previous talk, where the question is, how are electric vehicle batteries and how are the vehicles themselves standardized and approved for use? So the outline of my talk is given here. The importance of the battery safety, I will go over that because I'm sure everybody shares that opinion of the importance. And we'll talk about the types of the safety and abuse tolerance tests, the approach to test method development. Different organizations choose to write their test standards with different objectives in mind, so we'll compare this. And so that's one of the reasons why test standards are different. We will do a brief comparison of the test methods, and then focus on two areas that have a lot of attention in the testing community today, that is internal short circuit tests and the propagation of failures. As I mentioned, battery safety and abuse testing is of critical importance. Safety is a big barrier. It is a systems issue with many inputs and factors. That is to say, if a cell is tested as being safe and is engineered into an application with poor engineering implementation or incomplete understanding of the system interactions, that safe cell can become unsafe in the application. It requires a systems approach, and standardized tests are crucial to obtain fair comparison of different technologies. Jan mentioned earlier that a nail penetration test can be a cell design can be changed to, with the same chemistry in it, can be designed to pass the test. There's other ways that the results of the test can be influenced by how the test is done. One of the most important of those is, what is the thermal environment of the cell? If you fixture the cell and hold it in a way that you conduct a lot of heat out of the cell, you are disposed to pass the test. That may be representative of your application. In that case, it's okay. However, if the application does not allow that same heat conduction, then the test is not accurate. The results are not accurate. Very important point. And the standardized testings, which I will talk about here today, is trying to avoid companies from obtaining unfavorable results in the test that they do not deserve. The goals are to characterize battery response to off-normal conditions such as defects, accidents, negligence, and the like. I want to make a comparison to abuse tests and field failure. This has been mentioned, but only briefly in some of the talks, so I want to address it directly. Abuse tests are systematically investigated. That is to say, you crush a test, you short circuit a battery, and you score the results, you characterize the results. Field failure is different. It is unpredictable. It has been attributed to manufacturing defects, loose connections, foreign debris in the battery. The failure may occur in aged U cells that you don't see early in life. Often it is an internal short circuit is the mechanism of failure, but all of the cells that have field failure have passed the abuse tests. And so we can't test the abuse tests that we have do not predict field failure. And I want to. We will talk about this later, but that's an important distinction between what mostly the test test procedures cover are abuse test failure, and they do not cover what I call field failure. The incidence of cell field failure for manufacturing are very low. They are estimated at 1 in 5 million, 1 in 10 million. There's another estimate, 1 in 40 million. So we say, that's pretty good. 1 in 40 million ought to be okay. However, there are many, many cells on the road. There are 250 million cars on the road, just in the United States, and I didn't realize that we have a quarter of the world's cars when they went, that we just passed a billion cars. I had no idea we had that number. The battery packs are large, 15 to 56 kilowatt hours, and the number of cells are large. The Tesla Roadster has 6,800 cells, and there are 1,200 Roadsters sold, so that's 8 million cells. Moreover, we don't know how to scale this 1 in 5 million to 1 in 10 million number. That number was gathered on 18650 cells because they're manufactured in large number and because there is an established industrial base. They have been made for many years, and therefore the reproducibility of the manufacturer is good. The manufacturing defects are low. And so with that number, how do we scale that to rates observed in small cells? Should we scale it per cell, perhaps per electrode area, perhaps per length of the electrodes if the source of the flaw is along the edge of the electrode where you slice the electrode and then and the quality of that slice is important so you don't prevent internal shorts? Moreover, how do you scale it for a new manufacturing product that is not manufactured in tens of millions, but might be manufactured in tens of thousands? How do you understand the statistics of that field failure? Very important question. Very little is known about that. Now we will go to the main part of the talk. The types of electrical abuse, we will group them in mechanical abuse, thermal abuse, and electrical abuse. You can see the different types of tests. Many organizations are working in this area. And what I left off here after in thinking about the previous slide is that in the United States, the U.S. Department of Transportation, the office within that department is the National Highway Traffic Safety Organization, or NHTSA. They are in the process of revising all of their standards to address the problem, the potential problems of this new vehicle that has stored energy on board. And so they should be added to this list. And I'm sure I'm not familiar with the governmental organizations in the EU, nor in Japan. But I'm sure those governmental agencies are working also with the goal of protecting the people having safe products on the field. And so I believe in the good intentions and the good efforts of hardworking people in our government services. I want to make another comment that test method is developed either for characterization or for pass-fail tests. Characterization tests are useful in the early stage of development where you really don't have a way to establish what is a passing figure of merit. It is also good for input to risk management analysis. And there is a publication from the United States Advanced Battery Consortium where it shows that the risk, it shows quantitative calculations where the risk is the product of the severity times the frequency. And so this characterization test, this type of test, allows you to get the severity And then through other analyses, you get the probability or the frequency. And then with those two inputs, you can assess risk. And so that is the important use of characterization tests. Pass-fail tests are appropriate for mature technologies and for shipping standards. NHTSA, which I mentioned, United Nations, underwriters, and others. SAE's published their first pass-fail standard for vehicle batteries in February of this year. A comparison between the standards. Each test method tries to develop tests that are specific to the particular use environment. And UN tests require short circuit on cycled cells because they figure cycled cells will be shipped. That's not standard in all the other tests. IEEE laptop computers require float charge tests because laptops and cell phones are left plugged in for long periods of time. That's not often part of other tests. SAE requires monitoring of hazardous gases. That's not required in the other standards. So this is because each of these groups are looking at their particular environment and trying to understand what tests are important. Some standards give design guidance, which is not only to say what is the test you have to pass, but this is how you have to make the battery. IEEE and Underwriter Laboratories have that style of standard. They will tell you what kind of insulation and how far do you have to separate the terminals depending on voltage. Others just have test definitions and they don't have guidance for design. Some similarities exist. Sometimes there's identical test conditions. That is usually the exception, not common. Standards may cross-reference other standards. That is somewhat more common. So my take on the status, my opinion on the status of test harmonization, I give it is fair to poor. Each organization wants to do the tests in a different manner, even if they're doing the same type of test. There is little incentive to reach agreement, except for a few organizations that have prior agreements already made. And for example, underwriters and IEC have a good collaboration and publish documents under both standards. I have several slides now coming up. They're a little bit busy. Matter of fact, they're very busy. So I'm giving you a warning. But it is an overview of key elements of the safety standards, focusing on abuse tests, but only looking at automotive traction batteries. So what you will see in these slides is the test title. This is for electrical abuse. Well, I give the UN test section 38 as a comparison, and then I give the SAE standard 2464. I was the chair of that committee. I participated in UL 2929, which is the follow-on to 2464, but is a pass-fail standard. 2464 characterization, pass-fail. There is an IEC standard. This is for cell levels for EVs. There's an ISO standard, which is a pack level test. There is a new Underwriter Laboratory 2580, batteries for use in electric vehicles. I was on that committee. It is a little difficult for me to predict how widely the Underwriter Laboratory test will be accepted in the industry, but it is an important reference point. Also, just for your curiosity, I added a Korean test, MVSS 18-3 driving battery safety test, and I added a standard from India. There is a battery operated vehicle safety requirements. And so this is just for an overview. There are more than this. I have little knowledge of China because I can't. First, I have a difficult time getting the standards, and then I have a difficult time getting an English translation of the standards. Japanese is another area that I've been a little difficult to get. Anyway, so you'll see these, and then below I'll have a couple comments on them. The X means there is a test. I did not put the details up here. This is not the right forum to discuss the details. But I show, yes, there is a test. Everybody thinks short circuit, external short circuit is important. Everybody has a test, but these tests are done differently. Everybody thinks overcharge is important. Everybody has a test. Those are also done differently. The newer standards, interestingly, are not just testing the batteries, but testing the ability of the control circuit to work properly. And so there are new tests, and UL has a test that is the overcharge protection evaluation. That is to say, you run an overcharge with your protective circuitry in place, and you see if it's doing the proper job. Likewise, over-discharge protection evaluation, and they even chose to do this test and not do the actual over-discharge. They just decided to just check to see if the electronics are working. If they did, we're okay. These are mechanical abuse tests. There are more mechanical abuse tests here: altitude, vibration, drop test, mechanical shock, and on down. So there's a greater variety of tests. None of the tests have universal acceptance. The closest is vibration, but not everybody has that. The next closest is mechanical shock, or maybe this is the closest, because all but one have that. And often the tests are done differently again. And the last are thermal abuse tests. Again, there's quite a number of tests. Temperature cycling, which is also called temperature shock, where the battery is rapidly changed from negative 40 to plus 70 or 75 or 85 degrees Celsius, is the most common of the tests. Also, I would draw your attention to the standard where you find the description of the most highest variety of tests is J2464, the SAE standard, and the UL standard, 2580. Many of these other tests, IEC, ISO, for example, just don't even approach these other aspects. Moreover, there's no agreement on the hazard severity score. UCAR first published this in the late 1990s. There was a Volkswagen presentation, Herr Josefitz, I think, was the author of that, where I first saw this. And it has been adapted. SAE takes it very, very similarly, but there what our opinion was is that a rupture without fire is an easier event to recover from than a fire. And so we should put rupture first and then fire, not fire then rupture. And so we have, and that also agrees with the way IEC approached it. But then on these other ones, for example, on a score one, there's deformation here, whereas deformation damage only accord a score of two. The venting is here, but venting is there. So we can't even agree on the scoring, and moreover, on how the test's done, which is why I gave it a score of fair to poor. So what are the important issues in current topics? Internal short circuit tests and propagation tests. Several organizations are trying to develop, this is a typo. That should be an internal short circuit test. That's the wrong word there. Internal short circuit. And we will review some of the details of these in the next slide. Then we will talk about propagation tests. But I just draw your attention. Only two standards have propagation in it, the SAE 2464 and the Underwriter Laboratories test. There are several ways to create an internal short circuit in a cell. So let's go over them quickly. You can do anode active material to cathode active material. So this is the negative electrode, this is the positive electrode, aluminum current collector, copper current collector. So you could do a short through the separator. You could also do, so that is the, you know, just if there were a particle between the two electrodes. You could also short the carbon anode to the aluminum current collector, depending on how the short occurred. You can do the opposite. You could do the positive to the copper current collector, or you could directly short the copper to the aluminum. Each of these types of shorts have a different impedance. It was very appropriately pointed out earlier that the impedance of the short matters to a great extent on the outcome of the test. When the impedance of the short is similar to the impedance of the cell, which is impedance matching, which was mentioned, that is usually the worst situation. And so for a, and usually, by the way, the positive electrode is a very resistive, the most resistive of these different structures. And so if there is a short, so either this red one or this black one, to the cathode coating, it is the usually the most benign condition. So how can we, if we're understanding this, how do we judge the tests? No test has gained acceptance of many industry or test organizations. Underwriter Laboratories has a blunt nail crush, which is similar to the gentleman from Crappy who was talking about his push of a rounded rod against the cell. The advantage, and so this is done until they see 100 millivolt drop of voltage, and then it is backed off, and then they watch the cell. The pro in favor, method does not require a lot of special sample preparation. The negative, the con, the short mechanism depends on how the blunt nail interacts with the internal construction. It turns out from the presentations I've seen, you need to know what's underneath the can, because if a tab is underneath the can, you get a different result than if a wound, just the wound laminate is underneath. Also, there's other aspects of how to do the test, the speed, the diameter of the rod, and so there's a lot of details. NASA has a blunt nail method, and they use it to qualify lithium-ion rechargeables for use in space applications. And thereafter, they do the blunt nail push, and they get their 100 millivolt drop, they expose the cell to the vibration that is the analogous to or simulation of the shuttle launch. Now, unfortunately, we have no more shuttle launches to our great sadness in the United States, but so that's what they were using. Japanese has a C8714 method, forced internal short circuit test. They disassemble a charged cell, insert an L-shaped nickel metal particle between the electrodes, carefully put the cell back together, put it in a plastic bag, and crush it with a blunt rod right over the L-shaped particle. And they attribute, and by the way, this was initiated after the 2006 series of accidents. Sony cells and other manufacturers were involved. That was so traumatic to the Japanese cell manufacturing industry, they decided, what should we do? They published this standard. They attribute better safety performance since then to results cell manufacturers have by making cells that pass this standard. However, it does not apply to polymer cells because polymer cells, they're glued together. You can't disassemble them and put a particle in there. It requires equipment and cell preparation, and I believe it is unsafe for large format cells. I would not have a person working for me unfolding a 20 amp hour cell and putting a little piece of conductive particle and putting that back together. I would not allow that to happen. So this is limited to small cells and brave technicians. SAFT has an internal heater wire test, which actually is very interesting. They apply a current in order to melt the separator inside the cell and cause an internal short that way. And the experience, so this can create an internal short circuit, But our experience at Sandia National Laboratories was that the heating was often diffuse, and it looked like an internal thermal ramp. You just kind of heated the whole cell up. But perhaps with some more work, that might be workable. But again, this requires that a cell be opened and something put inside and then closed up. And I'm just very skeptical. At Sandia National Laboratories, there is a thermal trigger with a low temperature melting alloy. There are a number of alloys that melt at modest temperatures, 60, 65 Celsius. When the cell is wound, those are sprinkled in the cell, and then the cell is cycled, and it can cycle normally, and then the cell is brought up to 65 Celsius. The metal, this alloy melts, creates an internal short circuit. You can produce an internal short circuit. However, many people are skeptical that this different mechanism to create an internal short circuit by this foreign object that melts and creates a different kind of internal short than you have like with lithium dendrites, whether it's meaningful. And they are having difficulty with cylindrical and prismatic. And lastly, Motorola and Oak Ridge National Lab, that should be NATL Lab, sorry about that, have modified the blunt nail crush to have two spheres of equal diameter push on a cell. And so the cell is suspended, and these two spheres push on it. The advantage of that is that the internal short is moved from the very near surface region, like the blunt nail crush. Blunt nail crush causes this internal short in the top one or two layers. The internal short is moved to internal layers within the cell. So that has some merit. It can cause internal short in the internal winding, but it cannot be used on cylindrical cells. This only works on prismatic cells. So my opinion on internal short circuit tests, they should be used in the development of more abuse tolerant cells. Cell manufacturers should perform internal short circuit to reduce the severity of response, but significant challenges remain before it is suitable for a safety and abuse test standard that would be applied as a pass-fail test or even as a recommended test or something like that. It is just too many variables, and I list the variables right here. So without a test for internal short circuit, what do we do? It is an important failure mode. Okay, important failure mode. The internal short circuit can be benign, but it can also trigger thermal runaway. I said it's a low probability event, but the worst outcome is very severe. You can have a cell vent and burn in your battery pack. In advance, we can't predict if or when it will occur. I mentioned that, and I'm running short here. So if the goal is to confine the damage to one cell, it appears to me if we can't predict it and measure it, we acknowledge it can occur, and our goal is to make it, if it occurs, if it ever occurs, it stays with the one cell and goes no further. So that's what the goal is. Failure of one cell should be contained by the battery pack. It cannot cause destruction of the entire battery pack. Propagation test is the only way to evaluate this outcome. And I personally have seen destruction of the entire battery pack and have seen successful passing of this test. It can be done. It requires skillful engineering and understanding the thermal management and how to design a battery pack that will have its goal. Failure of one cell should be contained in the battery pack. And the goal is graceful failure, is the term I use. And the French nation is known for their grace in many things. I think this ought to be a leadership position from the French academies to make sure graceful failure is implemented in all of the products out of France. And it is particularly important for large format applications like vehicles and stationary applications. As I said, this is observed in the field. The laptop failures in 2006 included several explosions from a single laptop. separated by several minutes. And that was caused by, a six-cell battery in a laptop. Number one cell goes, it heats up the next cell, then it goes into thermal runaway. Number two cell goes, three and four, and down the way. It's also been experimentally observed in last test. Propagation between cells has been modeled using accelerating rate calorimetry data, as well as conductive, convective, and radiative heat transfer. I worked with Bob Spotnitz on a simple little calculation that was published a couple of years ago. And here is an example of a propagation. So you're looking at a series of laminate cells in a short circuit. And so there goes the first cell. And if it were to stop there, you'd be okay. But then there goes the second cell. And then pretty soon, here goes another cell. There you go. And it is not so much the first failure that's the problem, but the propagation. I also want to draw your attention to all of this flame here. Earlier, in Jan's talk, we were talking about the heat released of all of the other chemicals, and particularly the solvents. The fact that you have all of this flame adds heat to the adjacent cells and makes the propagation much more likely. And so this is what the definition is in SAE 2464. My time is short. So what I will tell you is one cell within the battery pack renewable energy storage system, RESS, is driven into thermal runaway. It can be heated in situ in less than 5 minutes to a temperature of 400 Celsius, or it can be overcharged, whatever works. And then it is observed to determine if to the extent. This test is not only used in automotive, but it is under consideration in ISO 62619, which is rechargeable energy for industrial stationary applications in the draft. And so my second to the last slide is what is missing from the standards, and it is a flammability test for electrolytes. When electrolyte burns, it releases 2 to 3 times the amount of stored energy that the cell has. People have reported wick tests and flame tests and all other kinds of tests. It is my experience that those are of marginal relevance to the actual failure of a battery, which happens at high temperature. You have aspirated gas in aerosolized electrolyte, and the type of test should be done is a different thing, and this is an area that the safety standards have not addressed at all. Is a big gap in the safety standards, in my opinion. Summary: battery safety is of central importance to this industry. It is crucially important so that the worthy goal, the important goal of electric and hybrid electric vehicles, is not set back with a bad accident in a Western country. I think it could be seriously set back. So we need to have forums like this, and I applaud Jean-Marie for getting this group together to discuss these issues because they're of crucial importance. Abuse test standards have a key role in evaluating the safety, and organizations worldwide are developing standards. Harmonization should be given a higher priority. Thank you to the organizers, and thank you for your attention.